Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you for those who are in attendance, and it's good to see everybody coming towards the end of summer, and it's nice to see that, I'm sure for all of us, right? Anyway, do anybody do the roll call?
Sure. Blythe, Cathedral City.
Here.
Coachella.
Here.
Desert Hot Springs.
Here.
Indian Wells.
Here.
Indio.
Here.
La Quinta.
Here.
Palm Desert.
Here.
Palm Springs. Ranch Mirage.
Here.
Riverside County.
Here.
Al Caliente, we have a call.
Thank you. Do we have any members from the public who want to make comments to the TAC this morning? Seeing none, let's move on to any TAC members that want to make any comments. Our executive director.
Just a couple of comments to give everybody an update on. One related to cap and trade, which we haven't talked about in quite some time. On cap and trade, you know, there's a number of statewide funding sources we compete to attract those dollars to the Coachella Valley. We were successful last year in getting a planning grant that was tied to a initiative for the county and the city of Coachella down to Mecca, and it's about $170,000. That was good news, and the planning grant was intended to prepare us to get the big dollars, and the big dollars are what's called the implementation grant with the state of California. So we went after the planning dollars to set ourselves up for the implementation dollars, and just in the last few days, Erica uncovered that we're not eligible to get implementation dollars. And this is a refrain, whether you're in Desert Hot Springs or Coachella or anywhere else in the Coachella Valley, there's not a single census tract that is eligible in the Coachella Valley for cap and trade implementation plan dollars. To give you a sense of the stakes on this, the city of Fresno got about $70 million a couple years ago, and there's money again in the budget this year, and nowhere in Eastern Riverside County is eligible. Good news is there are some areas in Western Riverside County that are eligible, but again, we're not doing very well on cap and trade. The supervisor's office and the chair of CVAG, the mayor of Indio, and a number of others, mayor of Desert Hot Springs and mayor of, soon to be mayor of Cathedral City, all participated in a discussion about our challenges on cap and trade on Friday. Assemblyman Eduardo Garcia also attended in person and did talk about one of his efforts is AB 1945, and AB 1945 is now on the governor's desk. AB 1945 does make some improvements that help position places like the Coachella Valley by creating three different areas related to cap and trade, or at least tracking them, urban, suburban, and rural. And that's the essence of our challenges. As Jonathan well knows, the city of Coachella recently failed on getting some housing dollars, big dollars for affordable housing. And it was probably the most eligible place in the Coachella Valley. They received about 64 points. The lowest winning proposal was at 84 points. So it just gives you a sense of how challenging it is for us to get these cap and trade dollars. And if we can't get it with a project like that, it's hard for us to imagine getting any others. Long story short, we're going to discuss this with the chair. We're going to sign a letter urging the governor to support AB 1945. It's consistent with CVAC policy already. And I'll ship that out to all of you in the next 24 hours. Hopefully, your own councils have got kind of broad level of support for these sorts of things. To position Coachella Valley for these funds. So we have a lot, even with this, by the way, even with this legislation, we have a long way to go. It's not going to make us eligible for these big implementation plan dollars. Got a question about this?
Yes. Well, it's a comment. You know why Fresno's getting the cap and trade.
I watched them, Fresno.
Yeah, I was manager there at the time. They're getting the cap and trade dollars because of high-speed rail. It's the quid pro quo for high-speed rail. Now, if you've been to Fresno lately, if you go down the 99, take a look at the pieces of high-speed rail that are being created like little bridges all through the town, and they don't connect to anything. And and the dream is that someday they will connect to Merced. But right now, they're just sitting up there in the sky and they don't connect to anything. But the city went through all sorts of hell to get, you know, to get this stuff through. And so the trade was that they're looking after Fresno when it comes to cap and trade, which of course most of the cap and trade money is going to what? High-speed rail. I don't think, I mean, I've been trying, I got to San Bernardino and we had this monumental, this great transit station that just got built, and we couldn't qualify for cap and trade money to build housing next to it. And you would think that would be the most obvious place in the state that you would be putting affordable housing. And we couldn't get it. And it's because they have stacked all of this in favor of the big urban areas where they get the biggest bang for the buck in terms of carbon footprint. And if anything's ever going to change on this, it's going to be done at a very heavy-duty political level. And I think we're wasting our time on local efforts. It's going to have to be something that gets done with parts of the state, all over the state, because we, right now it's stacked against us. There's no way to qualify. It just isn't.
It's exactly the conversation on Friday in my office, and we believe that state legislation might be necessary, and finding allies probably in the Central Valley in particular, and curiously enough, maybe even in the Bay Area. We cannot compete the way the rules are currently written, and most of our agencies don't even put an application in because we don't meet the minimum eligibility requirements. So we've got a long way to go on this. I guess maybe one bit of good news is Eduardo Garcia is something of a star on cap and trade and energy related issues, and if anybody can help us, we believe he very well could. So. More on this, we are working with your office, George, and Brian Estandi in particular, and of course, the supervisor here on potential legislation. Nothing else on that front.
Okay, thank you, Tom. You have the consent calendar next?
Move approval.
Second.
Any opposition? So items are approved.
I just need to abstain on the minutes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, our member from Palm Springs is here, for the record.
Thank you.
I'm looking good.
It's big. I don't look like
Tom. I would generally not recommend you do that. It doesn't work very well for me.
And now the big item on the agenda, Tom.
The big item for you.
Yeah.
It is that time of year again. You know, it's a custom for the chair of the TAC to represent the same agency as the chair of the executive committee. In that case, the chair of the executive committee hails from the great city of Indio, and the current vice chair is from the Agua Caliente band. So with that, do we have a motion for chair and vice chair?
I move that we elect Mark Scott from Indio as chair and
Tom Davis as
vice chair.
Second.
Any other nominations? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
It is unanimous.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're going to let train go by?
If I had known you were supposed to wear a coat and tie when you're the chair, I'd have dressed more appropriately.
But you had no idea you'd be elected, so
that's true. I wouldn't want to be counting my votes. So am I now the chair?
You are.
So I get a gavel?
Oh,
all right.
That's trouble.
This is power. All right, so my first act as chair then would be to call the next item, which is about dissolving the TAC.
Generally because they were concerned about the incoming chair, I think. This is a very informal conversation, and one, as my staff report indicates, stems from a lunch that Isaiah and I had a couple months ago. Where Isaiah was asking about the kind of role of the TAC, and as sometimes you all are put into an awkward position of voting on this and that, when perhaps there might even be a conflict on your own council about a vote. And so Isaiah raised that very question, but I used it as an opportunity for you to generally have a conversation about the role of the TAC. And we did a survey of other organizations and found that you all, as city managers and chief executives, are asked to do a little bit more at CVAC than you're asked to do at places like Sunline or Riverside County Transportation Commission or SCAG. And some of you hail from other parts of the state. And it's certainly been my experience long ago statewide that it's unusual how involved, if you want to call it that, or how much attendance the city managers have at CVAC. You obviously participate at the technical advisory committee level, and then you also generally sit as an ex officio member at the executive committee. I laid out some options, and generally what I want to share with you is from CVAC staff's perspective, it's very useful to have a TAC committee. It gives us a trial run on staff reports. It makes Joanna's life much better because our department directors have to submit their staff reports well in advance of executive committee meetings. So we get to do a trial run here, perhaps address questions, get a sense, of course, of the politics as well at times. And so it's useful on that front. On the other hand, it's just one more meeting. And CVAG, we've actually, David may be the only one that remembers, we used to have actually many more meetings. We used to meet monthly. We used to have more committees. And during my tenure here, we have cut back to make your life and ours more productive, less time on process and more time on producing, we hope. So that change has already occurred. So we only ask you to show up 7 or 8 times a year at this meeting and 7 or 8 times a year at executive committee meetings, but still an investment of time. And I laid out some options for you. Keep it as it is. The system ain't really broke. Maybe make some modifications. Isaiah and I talked about maybe this meeting stays this meeting, but it's not a Brown Act committee. It could still be an open meeting or maybe not. And we have a pre-agenda discussion where you or your designees could show up and get questions asked or ask questions and have them answered. And it does give us the same benefits of having a trial run. Other options involve just dissolving this and participating in the executive committee, or do what WRCOM does and keep this committee and just send your chairperson to represent the committee's deliberations at the executive committee. And that has a kind of appeal to me, just as a way of reflecting the will of the city managers without having you have to sit there for executive committee meetings. But again, staff doesn't have any strong feelings about this, and we can go any direction you like. Some of you have very little experience in this body, and some, again, I point to David. Wade, you're starting to become an old-timer here all of a sudden.
Don't even say that.
Yeah. But it's an open conversation. So with that, and Isaiah, you kind of sparked this. Do you have some thoughts?
Yeah, sure. So being new, I kind of view this as a way to work together. So one of the things that I've noticed is that the cities do work together very well. There's always going to be maybe a policy issue that creates some friction, but really at the city manager level, all of you were very kind to me and welcoming me to this group. And really, I think at the end of the day, you know, we have more things in common than we do differences. And I think at the city manager level, being the heads of your organizations, everybody understands that. So looking at the way the TAC was working, I had to sit in for Randy a couple of times, and I always got a little uneasy, one with the timing of TAC, because we're after the transportation committee. So our bosses, our elected officials, have already started to opine on public policy. And then we're in the middle, asked to provide input or guidance in that after one elected official has already kind of started approving or modifying. And then we're all looking ahead to the executive committee where we have a different elected official that's gonna see that same policy. So really, taking a look around the room, you know, you guys are the heads of your organizations because of the skill sets and the knowledge that you have. So it kind of, the timing of it seemed a little off. It seemed like the city manager should maybe be the starting point, and then it starts to flow through the elected official process, and at that point, you know, we all get it. Sometimes we propose things and it gets approved, other times they're modified, other times they're rejected. That's what the elected officials are there to do. So I was always a little uneasy kind of voting on items, and you know, sometimes we get pulled one direction over the other. And then I kind of looked at it from a overall standpoint is, you know, if there's a group of city managers that need to work together on an issue, does that create a Brown Act violation because we're all members of TAC? Why are we a Brown Act committee? So I kind of just started asking some of those basic questions. Tom and I had a great lunch, and this topic came up. So this was kind of just a way for me to introduce the topic to you guys. I don't know if anyone else feels that way, but those were just kind of my observations coming in. I recognize I am new, and this has been the process for some time. But I kind of wanted to just share my thoughts, one with Tom, to get his opinion on things, and then two, if it was appropriate to bring it forward to you guys.
Other thoughts?
Well, I could share some thoughts, because Isaiah and I talked about this, I don't know, whenever we got together a month ago or so. So I've been thinking about it some. And while it's appealing that the idea that we would only have the chairperson go to the executive committee, my experience is that typically the elected official is going to want somebody to staff them at the meeting. So if I don't go, I'm going to have to get somebody else to do that. And you know, some are more self-sufficient than others, but typically they like to have somebody. Now at the Maricopa Association of Governments, which is where I was before I came here, we had a similar setup. Most of the cities were larger, and so they had like an intergovernmental affairs position that sort of staffed the mayors at the thing. And we didn't have any elected bodies, any committees made up of elected officials below us. So like the Transportation Commission and the streets ones and whatever ones, Human Services, there was all kinds of them, were staff committees. So you didn't have a problem with anybody voting, you know, one way and then it going. What I like about this committee is it helps me become more familiar with the things that are going to be heard by the mayors in 2 weeks. So then if I detect that there's something that's going to be particularly, you know, controversial or important to us or something like that, then I can make sure that I have had an opportunity to brief the mayor, you know, prior to that happening. So I'd hate to give it up completely. And I don't think we're going to, that it's likely that we'll get away with not having anybody go with the elected officials to the executive. That's what my experience says anyway.
Can I ask the technical question before we get the rest of this? We're a Brown Act committee because of what? Because we take a formal position?
You are a Brown Act committee in part because the executive committee created you, and created you and the other policy committees as a regular committee that provides advice to the executive committee.
Yeah.
So, Joanne, is that fair?
Yes. It's a standing meeting.
And I think from my perspective, I agree with you, Charlie. You know, I know my elected officials like me sitting there at the executive committee level. And I think when we talked, you know, I was never really envisioning kind of getting removing TAC from the process. It was really just, can we make some tweaks to it so maybe we're first in line with, you know, is it a Brown Act? You know, regardless, I don't think it matters whether it's open to the public or not. But really, when you look at some of the policies that go forward, to me, it's just kind of my gut was we were skipping a key component, and that was us. Because by the time we're seeing things, it's already in the public realm and we've already had one elected official. So I think there's a lot of value with the skill set in this room. So kind of when we were discussing it, you know, for me, I wasn't really advocating to abolish TAC. It was maybe change the way that it's set up so that maybe we're first in line and then, you know, do we vote or do things just go forward after our review? Those were kind of the areas that I was headed. But I do think our review is critical. We understand our organizations, which is why we're in the spots that we're in. And we're also, you know, we do this on a daily basis in our own organizations. And in our own organizations, nothing will skip our review before it goes to the elected officials.
I was just going to say, support the fact that I think this is a very helpful process of being there with the mayors over the years at the executive committee meeting have been very helpful to them, so I wouldn't abolish that. The order of priority, I can see some of the circumstances that you're referring to, Isaiah. When the transportation committee agenda comes forward, I have a conversation with the council member who sits on that, as well as the public works director, to understand what it is that's on there and how we align with it. So I haven't had any issues so far in the 6 years as the city manager of any policy misalignment between our electeds and what CVAG's been doing. So when I saw this, I was kind of surprised because I was going, okay, what's the problem that we're trying to address here? But either way works for me. I would hate to see TAC abolished, and I'd hate to see us not participate at the executive committee level.
Wait.
I agree with a lot of what has been said. I can see you could make it voluntary to be at the executive committee. I think the same. My mayor has always wanted me to be there, whether I wanted to be there or not. I think Isaiah's on to something about moving this ahead, this being a first stop where we could have more of a strategic discussion, Tom, with you and your staff about how it works for each of us to move forward. We probably could have figured out the Third Amendment a little easier if we would have wrestled that to the ground before we went public. I think those are good. I think the Brown Act thing, as you know, I've been, as I discussed it with Isaiah and kind of looked at it with my own staff, it's sort of a technical problem for us to be successful as a valley. If you really can't have more than a quorum of us working together on an issue that we might hear at this committee, that's a problem, because most of the issues that we're hearing at this committee are serious valley issues. And certainly I could see, you know, five or six of us having a homelessness discussion that isn't a CVAG discussion and isn't at this meeting and therefore is a violation of the Brown Act. Not that we've had that or violated the Brown Act in any way. But I think there's an opportunity for that. And I didn't realize the, problem with that until Isaiah raised it with me the other day. I like the idea. I think we definitely keep the committee. It keeps us all informed. There isn't another city manager group out here. This is kind of the opportunity we all do check in. So I think that at least this is a good opportunity to check in. I like the idea of moving it earlier in the process ahead of transportation, and I think we're all gonna end up going to the executive meeting. That's one of those things you don't get to take away. You could add it, but that's not a takeaway. Everybody feels comfortable with your guy or gal sitting next to you, reminding you of what homework was actually done.
Other comments?
Homework?
David.
Just you know, the goal of this group was obviously. It's always been for me in all the years is being able to brief the council, or particularly the mayor who's going to be here, what's happening. You know, that will remain hugely important. But you're right, it does not have to be a formal Brown Act. I mean, as you think about it, there are times where, how do we really know what our council feels about an issue? You know, they always could change when it gets to the executive, you know, go differently than we did. We could just, you know, understand the issue so we can brief our council without taking a vote one way or the other. You know, there'd be nothing wrong with that if that's where the body wants to go. So I guess I'm okay either way, but you did make a point that we don't really have any forum to get together. And so we probably need to keep this for at least for that minimal,
right,
because it leads to other things too. It's helpful. So, you know, it certainly doesn't have to be a formal Brown Act. It could be more informal.
And I like the not voting. I've, you know, often had a split council in New Orleans.
That I think the real problem, and this is probably bigger than any of us can deal with here, I think the real problem is having council members that are different from your executive board member on all of these other committees. I mean, I've got a situation where I've got one on the homeless committee that's out there doing things that don't reflect, I believe at this point, what the majority of the council would want to do, but I don't know that for sure. And then, you know, kind of becomes the self-appointed expert on this because of being on that committee. And that's the part that's different from regional council of government that I've been involved in the past, is having all of these other committees that are staffed with elected officials. Now, I think that's unlikely to change. That would be sort of a sea change. But the way it worked at MAG was these technical committees were designed to work out all of the technical issues related to a thing and you know, then make recommendations first to the management committee, which would be the TAC, and then that went to the so it was a different, it wasn't really the subcommittee, the committees weren't really policy bodies so much as working out how would this, if we were to do this, how would this work and what would we need to do to make it work and that kind of thing. So that's my 2 cents worth, but
where do we go from here?
So then, just real quick, is it possible to realign the committee structure where the TAC meets before the transportation committee?
It is, and problematic too. You actually do meet before energy and environment, for example. If you met before transportation, our committee process takes about a month. If you met before, we're talking about 5 or 6 weeks before the executive committee, and you'd be meeting potentially before 2 executive committee meetings. It's just it's a workflow challenge for us, for you to meet 5 to 6 weeks before the executive committee. And things do come up. Something came up today on your agenda today that if it was transportation related, may not have been heard by the transportation committee. So there are some challenges. It could be certainly accomplished, and so could changing CBAC's committee structure. I've been one to say, you know, our committee structure evolved in 1973, and in 1973, our elected officials from Indio and Palm Springs probably didn't visit with one another very often. It was a long way, and there weren't a lot of fora for doing so. Taking a broad look at what we do and how we do it. I think Maricopa is a little different than most. SCAG, for example, has a similar committee structure to ours, where you may have a transportation committee member who is not your executive committee or general assembly member. With RCTC, it's generally one member who may also serve on subcommittees. So there are a number of approaches, and I think I hadn't really thought about it the same way Charlie did, but that is a big challenge at CVAG, where you don't, a committee member may not reflect the will of the council itself generally. And that maybe that should be, rather than rethinking the TAC, maybe it should be rethinking our policy committee structure.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened probably 3 times, at least in Palm Springs over the last year, exactly the situation that Charlie raised. And it does, and that's probably the most problematic issue.
Well, let me ask a couple questions. I actually hear 2 different issues that some of us are concerned about. One of them is just the awkwardness of being in a position of voting on CBAG policies where we've got some differences on our councils, and I always think it's kind of awkward here when a city manager has to abstain on a vote because we don't know what our council member would think about it. Is it necessary for us to have recorded votes like this? I mean, is there not another way of doing this without where each of us has to go through doing?
It is not necessary. That's one of the options I outlined for you. You could keep this as a Brown Act committee and take no votes. There's nothing that requires voting. You could also have it become a more informal, not Brown Act committee that is a pre-agenda workshop at CBAG that occurs for anybody to attend each month.
That's why I asked the Brown Act question, because there's an attraction in that. The other issue that I see is that for city managers, it's great to have a forum where we get together and we can talk. I mean, AJ will remember the days when these city manager type meetings were really about mental health, hours. and it was how we could all get together and just go through all the trials and tribulations and feel better about our own situation because this guy's is worse than ours. So I've always, San Bernardino had the same kind of structure, and there's people from the public who sit in and scour every word you say there. I thought that was really taking away from us something that makes us more effective in what we do. If there's a way to make this less formal and still provide advice to our elected officials, I think that, because I do think that advice matters. I think we do have something to offer. I would think that would be maybe a better model if we could develop that. And I don't know if that's something we need to take back to get legal advice on.
We've gotten legal advice on it. It's doable. We could construct something. I think, Isaiah, you asked the same question of your council. We could construct something that can be either open to the public or not, but I see no reason why it wouldn't be open to the public, where there's a city manager's luncheon. It's a pre-agenda workshop, and folks could sit in here and listen to it, and it could be, again, open with no votes. And maybe, in fact, that might argue for it being maybe even a little closer to the executive, maybe a week before the executive committee meeting rather than 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And you could hear basically have the whole agenda. I don't know if that would work, Joanna.
Sure. My concern would only be having a standing meeting with the Brown Act issue, but we could work it out.
Yeah, it's still posted.
Legally, you're running on a pre-agenda workshop, open to the public notice, but no vote. So I think we're covered Brown Act all the way around.
Yeah.
The one issue about the other committees, the bulk of the stuff that we do, a lot of it is transportation, and that's the most technical. I think it is important for us to have our technical transportation folks going through all the details before we do it. So at least if we change the order, I still think it's probably important to have them do whatever they're doing before we see it.
Well, as you look at the order, even if the study session was two-parter, reviewing what's coming up next month and what's coming up in 1 week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks a lot, Wade.
Yeah. I think that the study, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, you may.
I think the study session idea has some merit to it. I would still post it. I think anything that tries to avoid going through the Brown Act looks like what it is, which is an attempt to avoid. And I don't think we want that. But I think there would be value in treating it just like it is without taking votes. And I still get a lot of value from hearing what other cities, what their position is going to be, whether we vote or not, on it. And that could all still happen. So I like that idea.
Well, and you may be able to structure it if we're not voting, because we're not elected officials, we're not the policymakers here. If we're not voting, I think you could restructure, because Brown Act issue, I think, is particularly troublesome, or we should at least get some clear definition about what happens if more than a quorum of us, even a daisy wheel kind of violation, if we're working on a project, homelessness or something, it's going to touch all of us outside of this meeting.
Right. We're all going to dinner on the 17th. We can create all sorts of havoc there.
Gee, baby.
All right. Is there general consensus with that? We should probably make an effort at writing that up. And
what I could do, I don't think this is a pressing matter. Before we approach it, whatever you do might require a blessing by our bosses, the executive committee. But before we do that, why don't I write up a proposed approach, check in with legal counsel, and we'll put it on your next agenda and say, would this type of an approach work? And start there. Charlie's perhaps more radical changes or potential changes we can discuss at that point, but I don't think that's probably in the cards anytime soon. Is that a fair approach? And in the spirit of the agenda item, it could be by consensus.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, we've got consensus. Thank you. All right, the next item, item C, is Martin, update on right-of-way acquisition activities for CityLink.
Good morning, Chair, members of the PAC. This is an update on right-of-way activities for CityLink. If you recall, the executive committee, they certified the EIR for CityLink back in May of last year. And we've been working on the next steps to get the project to construction. That includes completing the NEPA, which has been done as well. The executive committee back in September of last year approved the contract with county EPA to help us with the right-of-way acquisition process. So CBAG staff and our consultant, engineering consultant, Manero Smith and Associates have been working with county EPA on a variety of tasks related to right-of-way. And as you know, most of the right-of-way associated with the property is controlled by flood control or controlled by the water district. And our position in the right-of-way, much of that involves a license agreement, some of the form of agreement will be required on that property for the construction of CityLink. And we anticipate doing the same with tribal properties and private properties. So we recently received a lot of appraisals on properties, and they involve property negotiations. So as such, we're going to be taking those to the executive committee in September in closed session to get the go-ahead to release offer packages on those right-of-ways, on those properties. After this item was presented to the Transportation Committee, CMAG was notified that Coachella Lake Water District and Riverside County Flood Control were nearing completion of the license agreements that we have with them. And that means that these should also be presented to the Executive Committee in September. So reference is made in the license agreement and the recommendation for that purpose. And it was added to the recommendation, and that the Transportation Committee's they concurred with our recommendation, but we're adding the license agreements to that recommendation. So as we transition from the planning stage to construction, there's naturally going to be some additional costs that are going to be related to CityLink as we're getting to construction. And we recommend that the executive director be giving authority for any and all right-of-way actions related to construction of CityLink. The executive director currently has a $10,000 signing authority. Staff is recommending that he be given $50,000 authority to do that. Since our committees meet intermittently throughout the year, it will help us keep on schedule and keep the project moving. Other regional transportation agencies have been over $25,000 to $150,000 authority, so this will help us a great deal. Also, at the Transportation Committee meeting, it was suggested by Council Member Weil that this authority have two signatures required to authorize the executive director to have that special authority. And through discussion, it was concurred by the Transportation Committee that also move forward. And that's generally our practice on other actions.
It's actually not just generally, it always is our practice.
Always is our practice. And CVAC has the funding currently available. CVAC was allocated a little over $2.8 million last year for right-of-way activities, so we do have the money to move forward on this. And as soon as we start receiving acceptance from the offer packages, we'll get a better idea of what segments would be constructed next. So with that, staff recommendation is that the executive director be delegated the official representative to take any and all actions required pursuant to federal and state law to complete the right-of-way acquisition process and license agreement process for constructing the city link, and have authority to spend up to $50,000 for expenditures related to right-of-way and construction activities for city link. That concludes my staff report.
Any questions?
Is that $50,000 per item, or is that a total on
per item?
Per item, okay. That's good, actually, because I think it's going to likely be more complicated based on the experience we had with our little section than what we think. So, and it will this be to acquire right away all over the whole length of it? You're not focusing in on just certain areas, or?
Well, we're focusing on the core alignment with the exception of Rancho Mirage.
The what? Oh, yeah. I understand that Rancho Mirage and the cities that have opted out won't be part of it, but. It's not, you're not just taking, you know, one segment and focusing on it. It's to acquire right away all of them. Yeah.
Yes.
Other questions? Yes.
Who's the second signatory?
It generally department directors. And we have a two signature policy on warrants at CVAG. And typically any authorization requires four signatures. We have a form that goes in to finance a review by our finance department, and the signatures themselves may not even be me at times. It could be just two signatures from our department directors. We're not suggesting a change in our approval process, just in the spending authority allowed related to CVA link, right of way and construction.
So the $50,000. That should be made clear here, and then this $50,000 is for the executive director, not anybody in the organization.
No, it is actually for anybody.
I think you'll have some problems with that.
Well, would one of the two signatories not be the executive director?
We could indicate it as much. Yeah. One of the two has to be the executive director.
Right.
And just to acknowledge, that's not always the case. If the executive committee approves some expenditure and I'm not around, I will. The finance director and Katie might be the signatories.
That's totally different than it is at the city of Lima.
Yeah.
If you're not around because you're going to be in tomorrow, it's one thing. If you're not around because you're gone for 2 weeks, you would leave somebody as right. Acting executive director.
We have a number of internal controls. We obviously get audited, and our internal controls include multiple signatories. Mine isn't always on there.
All right. Any other questions? We have a motion.
So moved.
I'll second.
Moved by Riverside County, seconded by Desert Hot Springs. Is that right?
Rancho Mirage.
Rancho Mirage. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you.
Item D, Desert Community Energy Update, Katie Barrows.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is just a brief oral update with no action requested by the committee. As many of you are aware, CVAG's Executive Committee in June 2017 authorized the creation of Desert Community Energy, our Community Choice Energy Program. And after about 2 years of research and planning, that program was launched with the cities of Palm Desert, Palm Springs, and Cathedral City. As a result of some unexpected circumstances, the board of the DCE, Desert Community Energy, voted on July 25th to actually delay the launch that was anticipated for the 1st of August of this year. The factors that went into that decision really focused particularly on a rather dramatic and a significant spike in energy prices, in particular in the Southern California region, related to the prices of natural gas, some connections to Aliso Canyon and storage issues, a potential on the part of Southern California Edison for a decrease in rates, and one of the primary goals for Desert Community Energy and other community choice programs is to offer rate savings, or at least competitive rates compared to the investor-owned utility. And there have been some uncertainties about what's referred to as an exit fee that's charged on community choice customers. So under these conditions, the board basically made a decision to delay the launch. We were within a week of actually getting started and serving customers, because essentially one of the efforts that has been focus of this program is to offer rate savings, especially for folks, as we are all experiencing during the summer months, the very severe conditions and the amazing electricity bills. This is really an organization that was set up under CBEG's oversight, but is essentially a new business enterprise, and that decision to delay was really based on a financially prudent decision, as well as taking a look at what could be the best thing to do for the customers. With regard to that, it's worth noting, similar to the experience that the city of Rancho Mirage had when the program launched, it was very well received. We had what's called an opt-out rate, where customers could decide not to participate, and up to the point where we decided to delay, the opt-out rate was less than 1%. So we, did have a good response to the program. At this point, the board has decided to put off the launch until 2020. Part of that is related to changes made by the Public Utilities Commission, regulatory requirements that have really kind of slowed our ability to move forward. The chair, to notify everyone, we sent out a notice to all of the Edison customers in those three cities, and also reached out to individual large customers and key accounts to let them know. There was, of course, some information in the Desert Sun and elsewhere in other media. I think one of the things that the program is important to recognize is there's still a commitment on the part of the board to move forward with this Desert Community Energy in 2020. Giving electricity customers a choice, trying to offer competitive rates, a very strong focus on the opportunities for local control, cleaner, carbon-free energy. The program was also offering a 100% carbon-free option for customers. And I think for the region as a whole, the opportunities for more investment in local renewables and energy conservation programs. So this is really just a brief update. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Questions? Thank you. Okay, information items.
Mr. Chairman, before we move on, we did send out a notice on Thursday. We added an item to the agenda, made a copy of the subject material. It's related to the Salton Sea. And Brian contacted me on Thursday and asked me to put this on the agenda. And it's not for action today, but it will be presumably for the executive committee at the end of the month. So Brian Estandy is here, if we wouldn't mind giving him a little time.
Please, yep.
Thank you. Thanks, Tom. And Pat Cooper is here with me as well from the Vice President's office. Just to fill in the whatever I don't tell you about, which will probably be a lot. Pat and I have both been working on Salt Sea for probably over a decade, I guess, in various capacities. So thanks, Tom, for the last minute add on that. What we're asking CBAG to do is approve an MOU between Riverside County and Imperial County. Now let me back up. If you recall back when John Benoit was county supervisor, we worked on a plan called the Perimeter Lake Plan that was working with Imperial County, IID, CBWD, to kind of come to what we thought was the best scenario for fixing the sea, which is more or less a concentric ring inside the sea to allow water to flow all the way around there, by you're saving the shoreline of all areas within the sea. And then the shrinkage of the sea occurs in the middle part of the sea, which is the easiest to mitigate as far as dust control and so forth. So that was all going well until, as we know, John passed away. A few months later, the state, unbeknownst to Riverside County, came out with their plan, which was different than that idea. And it was not even close, actually. It was just a total mitigation of land around the mouths of the river down in Imperial County and Whitewater, just a very minimalistic mitigation plan. So fast forward, as Supervisor Perez was appointed, we worked with Supervisor Perez to say, well, let's at least save Riverside County's portion of the sea, of the shore, and build that more or less perimeter lake on the north side, and then Imperial ID, they can do whatever they want to do. We can't control that. So moving forward with that, which is what we did, and actually a grandmaster plan that wasn't actually concocted worked out in the sense that we probably hoped they would come along once we moved forward with that, and we did. And they did come forward. Imperial County Supervisor Kelly, that represents the Red Hill Bay Marina area down there, Imperial County, he requested a meeting that Supervisor Perez, Pat, and I attended, where he said, we would like to get back to that perimeter lake concept. You know, we don't know why the state did this or whatever, but we would like to get back to where we were. And so we said, that would be great. We were always there, but you guys, you know, decided not to, so that would be fantastic. So we thought of the idea of doing an MOU between the two counties to say, let's get back to an agreement on what we're going to do here with the Salton Sea. So the MOU just basically reflects that the two counties will be working together on this perimeter lake concept, and both counties working separately will be creating an enhanced infrastructure finance district, which we had proposed earlier. And you can ask me questions if you have any questions on that, but both counties are moving forward with that EIFD to help fund the basically the building of that barrier in the sea. So we're going to entities all within the region to ask them to endorse more or less this MOU that between the two counties that we have put together. Imperial County has approved it. Riverside County has approved it. IID has approved it. Did CBW take it up yet? Yeah, they did. And I know Imperial Counties, there's a couple cities they're going to get their approval of it also. Once again, it's really just approval of affirmation that we think it's a good idea to move forward. There's nothing really put on the cities in that regard. It's just kind of a joint statement saying we're all in this together in the concept to help restore the city. From there, any questions?
Questions?
It's rather benign.
Yeah.
Do you know what the boundaries yet of the EFID is?
Not exactly. I have a good idea, but we haven't brought it to the board yet. But it will probably be all the county area from in Riverside County line in the Salton Sea up to, you know, Indio, La Quinta, and Coachella, the city boundaries, basically. So Mecca Thermal and all the county area there. And I don't know about Imperial counties. Actually, I don't know if they've gotten to the boundary part yet.
Have you looked at how that will interface with the deserts redevelopment project area that's still
yes.
in place?
By law, you cannot include if you are not dissolved. If you're not dissolved, that you can't. So there is a portion that we will keep out of. It'll be a little donut hole that will not be included.
Anything else? Pat, do you have anything? All right.
Just as one aside, there is one of your city managers that worked on the first technical analysis of the IFD. How long ago, Fred?
10 years ago.
Yeah, it's been maybe more, years yeah, more than that.
And Tom was in another capacity working on it.
Yes, I was indeed. I thought I fixed the solvents.
Well, you did. So it all fell apart. Yeah.
I turn around one day.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, now information items. Are those yours?
You can read them. nothing to add.
Anybody have any questions on any of the info items? Okay, legislative issues.
You know, Erin couldn't be here today. She will be at your next meeting. Okay. She's obviously preparing for a little event going on.
That's an example of a place where a generic city manager meeting, there's no reason why we couldn't talk about legislative issues that have relatively little or nothing to do with CBAG issues. Is that part of our practice, or is that not how we've done this here?
Well, the place where we typically talk about the legislative issues, and Erin always comes and does it,
yeah.
So we have that Riverside County.
Yeah,
meeting, and you know, most of the time the legislative items affect both Western County and CBAG
right.
members, so
yeah, I agree. And unfortunately, the Riverside County meetings usually gets about half of the group, and they only have them quarterly, but anyway, that's just an aside. Announcements, upcoming meetings, Technical Advisory Committee, next meeting's November 19th at 11 o'clock, and it says, please note the date due to the Veterans Day holiday. So we're, would have been on the 11th or 12th?
12th, yeah.
12th, okay. And then the Executive Committee is on September 24th, when some of us will probably be at the ICMA conference. Is that a big challenge, or are there just a couple of us going?
I'm going, I just had somebody else go to the Executive Committee.
Yeah, so you may have a lot of subs that day.
All right.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? AJ, we didn't call on you. Do you want to make any comments?
I just want to make one quick comment. I forgot to put in my report that there were a lot of complaints about the state city manager's department meeting where managers could not get in because there were seats were already taken by consultants and others. There will be a new procedure this year where you will receive a notice and I will make sure you get a duplicate of the notice two weeks in advance of it being made generally public. So the suggestion is, if you really want to go to that department meeting, which is in actually the second week of February, not the first week of February, but the second week of February in San Diego, make sure you pay attention to that notice. Because once you get past that point, then the seats get filled up very, very quickly. Okay.
Right. The CCMF events are going to be incredible, so you want to make sure you're a CCMF member.
I know you are, Mark.
Frank, thank you.
Everybody should want to be a CCMF.
Yes, that's right. We have to induct Isaiah.
Yeah, they make you wear an orange hat at the first meeting. All right, anything else? That'll do it. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.